11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour.
Hey folks, it is the week of March 23rd, 2015, and you are listening to episode 7 of the Beyond the Handle podcast. I am your host, Alan, also known as @Slip on Twitter. That's Slip with five eyes, or Slip. Very excited about today's show. I actually recorded the interview for today's show well over a week in advance because, unlike when I was in school, I decided to get some work done ahead of time in anticipation of time off. I'm actually in Vancouver at the moment. At some point this week, I'm going to see the Jets play the Canucks here in Vancouver, and am really looking forward to the game and obviously hoping that the Jets pull off another win on this playoff run, which by the time you're listening to this, well, I'll hedge my bets either way and either say, wow, it's really great that we're still in the thick of this playoff race, or, oh shit, well, you know, nice season. But I think, well, I hope it'll be the first one. Anyways, my guest for this week is actually somebody who doesn't live in Winnipeg. This is the first time I've interviewed somebody using the power of Skype, and it worked out really well. And the other thing that worked out really well was my guest. It was Brian Grebe. That's @BLGREB on Twitter. Brian is a big-time Winnipeg Jets fan and is a big-time fan of our city as well, learning a lot about the people in the city through the power of Twitter, and both getting a chance to know members of Winnipeg's mainstream media, but through them also meeting a lot of us regular folks from around the city. So I know a lot of you know Brian, and I think that you'll be very interested to hear his story. He's got a lot to say about how he learned about Winnipeg and about how he became a fan of the Winnipeg Jets, about San Francisco, which is where he lives, which is a beautiful city, and about his family and his two sons, and a great story about how the Winnipeg community was there for him in a time of need. So it was a really great conversation, and I think we should get over to it right away. So this is the interview with Brian Grebe @BLGREB on Twitter here on Beyond the Handle. All right, everybody, this is episode 7 of Beyond the Handle. I'm actually recording the interview today on March 11th, so a couple of weeks before posting, and I'm very excited. For the first time, I am speaking to somebody that's actually not living in Winnipeg, but is definitely a Winnipegger at heart and an honorary Winnipegger. I have Brian Grebe on with me. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Brian can be found on Twitter @BLGREB, B-L-G-R-I-E-B. If you're not following him already, definitely do give him a follow. Brian, usually I start off by asking people what the story is behind their Twitter handle, but I think yours is pretty self-explanatory.
Well, it's very self-explanatory. My name is Brian Lynn Grebe. My dad's name is Lynn, so I'm named after him, my second name. So I always go by BLGREB on many things, even before the internet. So, you know, it's like you'd ask me today, what's your Skype number? And I don't use Skype much. And I had to look it up, and sure enough, it's right there. So, and I also like it too, because if you start saying like Urban Boy 52, it's like you can be anonymous and start trolling people. I stand by what I say, and I think it keeps me honest.
Sounds good. And yeah. You are in San Francisco.
I am.
So you're 2 hours behind us folks here in Winnipeg at all times. And you are actually, like, I was always wondering, you never actually have lived here in Winnipeg, have you?
No, I never have. I started following the Jets back when they came from the WHA into the NHL. And this was pre-internet. It was Fortran punch card time. Mm-hmm. But I just decided to follow the team, and it really just meant looking at the standings every day. I didn't really get stories or the hockey news or anything like that. But when the team was relocated, I really, really felt bad for the city of Winnipeg. I'm like, how do you move a Canadian hockey team? I mean, what are you thinking when you're doing that? So I kind of went on strike. I didn't pay attention to the NHL, and I always said, if they ever come back, I will follow them. And I was going to buy a hat or something like that. But with social media, it's like, I'm right there with you guys sometimes. It's really a lot of fun.
And when you talk about following the Jets, and we, I guess we call them version 1.0 here, you were living in Pennsylvania at the time?
Central Pennsylvania. That's where I'm from, near Penn State University.
So was it a matter of not being able to choose between the Pens and the Flyers, or what drew you to the Jets?
I've never really been a big fan of Pennsylvania for some reason, even though I'm from there. I was a Boston Red Sox fan. I was following the 49ers a little bit. I just followed the Winnipeg Jets. They had just won the WHA APCO Cup, and I said, okay, I'm going to jump on the bandwagon. This is going to be a great team. I just never jumped off that bandwagon.
and you shared our pain from abroad for...
I did, but it wasn't... I couldn't follow it the same way, you know? It's the funny thing with the internet, it's I'm sitting there watching games, basically 2 minutes behind everybody else in Winnipeg, so I can't... I'm usually not on Twitter.
Yeah.
It just gives it away to me. But I have the radio station on, which is about a minute behind in my kitchen as I cook, and if something happens, I can run into the living room and see it another minute later on the TV. So it's pretty funny, actually, to watch me.
What,
my kids go, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? I know it's going
to. You're like, spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
Exactly.
what prompted the move from Pennsylvania out west?
Well, I ended up going to engineering school in Cleveland, Ohio, and I didn't do so well in that. And then I decided to go to accounting school and found that to be totally useless. And it's even today, someone says, here's a piece of paperwork. I'm going, oh, for goodness. It takes me 2 hours because I don't want to look at it. But I ended up moving to Western Massachusetts, and I kind of got into a little bit of a scene there, and they were all moving out here, and my eventual goal was to move to California, which had very inexpensive education for in-state residents. And I ended up here because I didn't have a car. My goal was to move out of San Francisco and get a place, get a car, and live kind of, smaller town, Santa Cruz. And I got here, and I just fell in love with this city. You know, this is 1988 when I moved here.
Okay.
I was working for the Dukakis campaign as a volunteer, and I got off the plane, got a room, and went to the headquarters. So I always say one of the first people I met was running for local office here, and every night she'd come over and feed us the lasagna from her fundraisers. And I said, that lady that feeds us the lasagna, she's really nice. Well, that lady that fed us the lasagna was Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, shit.
This is the kind of nonsense that, I ran into right away. I didn't even realize what was going on around me. I just was sitting at the front desk in San Francisco, basically for the Dukakis campaign. So I'm walking down the street with her, chatting with her, knows me by first name. I've lived here for 2 days or something, so... that's how I moved into the city.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's quite the start.
And that's kind of a funny, and I didn't even know who she was, really. I mean, she wasn't anywhere near who she is today.
Mm-hmm.
She was working her way up, but it's a pretty funny story, actually, when I tell it.
And you said 1988, right?
Right.
So you experienced the earthquake?
I was here, yeah. One of the things I have is my Newsweek magazine with my name and address on it, and it's for my kids to give to their kids and finally throw into the bin. But no, I was here. We're funny because I'd gone out and bought a bunch of beer and wine and all kinds of stuff. I had friends coming over to watch the game. Mm-hmm. And I
sorry Brian, just for those, I'm sure most people do know, but this is the 1989 earthquake during the World Series.
And because of the speed of light, the way it works, we lost our TV before the earthquake hit.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I'm watching a TV and it goes out, and I'm just going, "You've got to be kidding me!" It's all great. What a time to go out! And then all of a sudden, I said, "Oh my God! A Mack truck just hit the apartment building! Oh my God!" And next thing you know, it starts shaking. I go, "Oh, this is an earthquake! My first earthquake!"
Uh-huh.
So I figured this was normal because I don't. So I go and get into a doorway and I start watching everything fall off the shelves and. I was being safe. The next thing, my Johnny Walker fell over. And I ran over and I caught it. And then the earthquake stopped. So, you know, I had a little bit of Johnny Walker.
Uh-huh.
Then I ran across the street to get batteries because we didn't have any batteries because I wanted to listen to the game.
Yeah.
And next thing, we put the batteries in. I get the last batteries off the shelf and the news starts coming in. And it's like, oh, my God, the Bay Bridge is down, 10,000 people dead. And we're like, oh. And a friend I still see in the neighborhood today came over to my house, freaked out. And like I said, we had like cases of beer and all kinds of stuff. So it was like to us, our power came on within 6 hours. We never lost water or anything like that. It was sort of a party. The whole city shut down for 3 days and they couldn't even do news shots because everybody was out of work.
Yeah.
So we're out in the streets and they had coffee shops open and everything else. It was dangerous though. I mean, it was scary. The neighborhood I was living on is built basically on granite, so it was pretty strong. But you could go down and walk through the city. You could see where the liquefaction and the sand started because right at that zone is where the street would be crumbled. The neighborhood I live in right now, if there was an earthquake, we would feel it really badly. It's built on sand dunes. But I was lucky living in Pacific Heights.
Has there been anything since then?
There have been small earthquakes, but nothing like that.
Wow.
There was the one up in Sonoma County, and I felt that a little bit, but once the earthquake hits the water, for some reason it doesn't translate. There were people in Marin County, which is just over the Golden Gate Bridge, that did not feel the 1989 earthquake.
Okay. Have you been to Winnipeg?
I never have. It's definitely on my bucket list. I always laugh because if I didn't bring my family, they'd tar and feather me. So I can't just do one on my own. I've got to bring everybody with me. And my wife, being from Ireland, we do a lot of travel there. That's kind of a priority for us.
Yep.
But one day I'd have to get up there and see it. I mean, I could literally probably have a whole season of people buying me games if I went up there, the people who have offered.
Oh, I would think so.
When it's warm, probably, because that temperature makes my molars hurt just listening to it. You know, I'm here. It's...
And I was, you know, one of the reasons I'm raising it at this point is because when you talk about earthquakes, we sometimes, when we're discussing these events that happen in different parts of the world, we think, well, Winnipeg is, you know, a relatively safe city when it comes to natural disasters. The only thing that really has impacted us is the occasional flood, which the city is relatively protected from. But that, you know, despite the fact that, you know, you could have the big one at some point in time, it's still worth it living in San Francisco, right?
It is. It's changed a lot since I moved here. Remember, I lived here before the first dot-com boom, and it was a totally different city. You know, it was actually unsafe at places. I mean, people in the Bay Area avoided neighborhoods in San Francisco that are now prime real estate because it was not what they wanted to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, we found that a lot of East Coast people would move to San Francisco and love it because it was relatively safe compared to like a New York, a Boston, a Cleveland, or anything like that. But the people here didn't know it.
Okay.
So, you know, you'd be living here and they're like going, oh, you live in San Francisco. Oh, that'd be horrible. I couldn't live there. And it's like, going, it's simple. You get on the bus, you go downtown, you walk here, you walk there. And a lot of people are kind of the guild. It's a lot of people have discovered that over the years. And our housing prices keep going up and up and up, and you just go, why did I go back to get the college degree? Why didn't I get 3 jobs and buy a house?
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I still remember a buddy of mine coming to town. I laughed. I said, you're in a $200,000 house right now. That $200,000 house would probably be $1.2 million right now. We were renting a trap,
and we
couldn't believe that they were gone for $200,000 or $150,000, and it's literally in 20 years gone up like fourfold.
You know, housing prices in Winnipeg have gone up quite a bit over the last probably 10 to 15 years, but by North American standards, it's still quite inexpensive. If you could just give us an idea, because San Francisco, I know, is famously expensive and has been that way now for a while. If I were to move there and I was like, you know what, I need to budget for one-bedroom apartment, and I want to be in the city. What kind of money should I be thinking of? And I don't want a crap hole.
$3,000 a month.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It's, we have rent control here, so if you got into an apartment at the right time, you're in decent shape. However, you're stuck where you are. You can't really move at this point, even if you need more space or anything like that. There's always been a two-bedroom apartment in our complex that I always coveted, and I missed it by like one day because the landlord's son-in-law said, sure, I'll move you in next time it comes up or whatever, you know, this is just a bigger two-bedroom. Well, I found out later, it's like he was the ex-son-in-law. He'd gotten divorced, and the next time I asked for it, it was, oh, we've already gotten rid of it. It was $2,500, and last people moved in, it's right, $3,500, and even more than that now. So, and it's not nice. It's not great. It's okay. Yeah.
You pay more for the location than the actual.
Well, that's what you find, though. It's like if you ever see some of the pictures I put out on the internet. I live across the street from a park with a tennis racket, tennis courts, basketball courts, play structures, sand. So we're out all the time. I mean, the funny thing is I can actually – my kids have rollerblades. So I take the hockey sticks and the hockey balls and stuff, and we play hockey across the street on rollerblades almost any time we want. And since we're not getting much rain this year, which is another story, you know, you find out that you're not really in your place too much. You're in your house to sleep and eat and to leave.
Yeah. Now, how did you, I guess – When the whole Jets 2.0 thing kind of happened, what was kind of the evolution of your, you know, kind of your initial camaraderie with this Winnipeg Twitter community?
Well, I was – the only reason I'm on Twitter – I got on Twitter was because a musician, Lloyd Cole, asked all the fans to get on and follow him. And I didn't know any – I had no idea what it was. I always thought Twitter was I just ate eggs, you know.
Yeah.
We were making fun of it for. We didn't know. I didn't know what it had become. So when the Jets came back, I was sitting here and it was the playoffs and the NHL playoffs were on. I said, I'll watch this a little bit. And next thing, one of the announcers goes, here's like Winnipeg might get a team back. I was like, what? And I actually was on Darren Ford's Jets owner site a few times, so I knew that there was a movement to bring them back. So I knocked over everything in the house and went over to the keyboard. And sure enough, there are the stories coming up. But then I look back how many other stories there were, and I go, what's going to happen here? And I'm not a big fan of Gary Bettman. And next thing you know, I got on, and I start following people on Facebook. And I haven't been on Facebook in a year, but then I got on Twitter. So, you know, I'll make this my Twitter account. Mm-hmm. So I started following Ezzie Ginsberg. I started following the guys on H&L. You know, I started following anybody who could give me news on what was going on in Winnipeg. And then I started interacting a little bit, and I followed 50 people and had 10 followers or something like that. And I just kept getting into the story, and when it finally broke that they were coming back, it was like this really glorious day for me. I was more for you guys, not me. I said, this is great. I'm going to go out and buy a hat and celebrate and never really watch a game.
Yeah.
But as time went by, it was like, I'll make it my second team, and, you know, and I wasn't really following the Sharks that closely. Next thing you know, it was like, well, maybe I'll listen to an H&L. Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll get some more followers. Next thing you know, I'm listening to the draft, and I'm cheering when they say the Winnipeg Jets with everybody else. And I was hooked. You know, I was watching every YouTube video. I tell people this. It's like if you're not a fan of Canada or if you're not a fan of Winnipeg and if you're not a fan of hockey at all, this is still a great story. It's a great story. It's a fantastic story of a little city that could in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And the enthusiasm was just contagious. And I think there's a few of us out there that follow the Jets that just caught on to that. And then I remember, well, maybe I'll listen to that game. So I started listening to TSN 1290 on the radio, not actually even watching a game. The first year, I listened to almost every game and listened to the Rick Rouse post game every game.
Okay.
My wife finally said, what are you doing? This is driving everybody in the house nuts. Get Game Center. So the second year, I finally got Game Center and bit the bullet and started watching the games.
I guess this leads to a story that I kind of see in here and there, but I learned quite a bit about when we started chatting in terms of setting up to do this interview. I guess the Winnipeg Jets community was there for you in a time of need?
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. It was like it was gone on to postseason, and we'd just gotten back from my parents' 50th wedding anniversary, and all of a sudden it's like I'm on the plane and I hear, is there a pediatrician on the plane? And I go, oh, there's some sick kid in the plane. And next thing you know, I see my wife back there and go, oh, what are you panicking about? He had a little blood in his urine, and I'm thinking, he's a kid, his brother hit him, he has a little infection, it's okay. So we get back, and of course we take the precautions, and there's a guy named Fred Poulin who's on the internet. He goes by No Foolin' Poulin. He's up in Quebec City.
Okay.
And I still remember the day that I had to take him to the doctor. And it was like, okay, well, I had to take him. How am I going to get him there? I had to go to his little preschool, and he got a scoot bike. This little kid scooted 20 blocks to the hospital to get this checkup for his kidney. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, it's going to be nothing. And my wife's freaking out. And I'm taking him back again. Don't take him back again. It's probably an infection. Just gonna give us some antibiotics. And I remember telling Fred, and it's like, yeah, I'm going to the hospital. My kid has a little blood in his urine. It's probably no big deal. And, you know, I go down and get in the office, and they shut the doors, and I go, okay, here it comes. No big deal. Your son has cancer. It's a tumor this big. And, of course, our lumps in our throats. And I didn't cry or anything. I'm like, huh? You know, I couldn't believe it. The kid went 20 blocks to the hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, the kid was in shape. And immediately they walk us through this long tunnel. My two kids are fighting with each other like little boys do, like normal. They check us into a hospital and they go, here you go. So immediately we found out not only was it cancer, it was stage maybe 5 in both kidneys. And I was like, rest in peace, buddy. That doesn't look good. Well, as time went by, they found out, well, there's no cancer in this one kidney, so it's stage 4. Great.
Okay.
But don't worry, this is not a big deal, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's 95%. It's called a Willems tumor. It's 90% or more curable. We do it all the time. Good. But anyway, he gets his kidney out, and I'm in charge of being with him as he sleeps for like 2 days. And I'm sitting there with him at night, and I sent a note to Ezzie Ginsberg of the Legal Curve, and he said, I'll tell the Jets, see if I can get you some posters or something. I said, cool. But the real connection probably was when Hustler was tweeting out pictures of his baseball trip for the summer.
Okay.
And I said, wow, this is really keeping me going. And he goes, what do you mean? Where are you? And I said, I'm in a hospital room next to my son that had a cancerous kidney removed. And I'm crying, he says back. And I said, don't. I said, this is just real. Oh, my God, I caught a baseball. I'll send it to him. I said, don't do it. You know, just keep it. What he did was he sort of took up the cause to get me some followers. And then as I went on to get Jets news and to just kind of decompress, How's your boy? So I finally started an account for him, which I'm BL Grebe, he's CD Grebe.
Okay.
So for people, so I put that out there, and next thing you know, Winnipeg Jets players were retweeting it. There's a guy, my friend Jeremy, did that for me. He got the cause going on that way to see if he'd get some Winnipeg Jets fans to follow Connor. Then people were following me and found out who I was. And eventually, you know, I sat in that little hospital room so often, listening to Illegal Curve, listening to TSN 1290, but at the same time interacting with all these people from Winnipeg who really kept my spirits going the whole time. And that's something that you just don't forget, the way that city came together for me. It's like Gary Lawless a few times would retweet something I'd put out there, and it would be like one time, our first game, he tweeted out a picture of Hustler and Connor, and my phone just buzzed for 2 days with people retweeting that thing. Eddie Lack, all kinds of people out there. So it was really endearing to me to go through that whole experience with that kind of support. It was,
I mean, you know, honestly, like Winnipeg is a great city. I mean, you know, I'm sure that a lot of cities, you know, you could see this story happening with a lot of cities, but I think that you picked the right town to interact with. Like, Winnipeg is a charitable city, and I think that people like looking out for the well-being of others. Maybe it's a Canadian thing. I think you'd get it in the U.S. too, but I think that if you really want to hit a home run there, then Winnipeg is the right place to be connected with.
It definitely was. I just met so many people online from there. It's funny. I've Skyped into 2 of the Jets fan parties. One, we just couldn't do the sound. And the second one, Pappy was just so busy running around. It was like going, oh, they're all having a good time. So.
and we, you know, like I have on my Twitter, and I know a lot of people that I know and people that have been on the show, we give a lot of grief from time to time to Jets players, members of our media, you know, like we give them crap all the time, but I mean, these were members of our media that, and our mainstream media that took up this cause. And I believe that, some of the gear that was sent down, I think Jim Slater was involved in signing some stuff too.
He didn't really sign anything, but I haven't seen her. Brandy, sent me a care package for Connor. Mm-hmm. Of just like little Jets mementos.
Mm-hmm.
During it. A few times did. Saatchi sent me some stuff for the kids too. I have some of the programs from the games here.
Yeah.
Right now I'm wearing a shirt for the show that Saatchi sent me down. I actually won a contest on TSN radio. I won a gift card and I had no way to spend it. I actually won a hockey stick too.
What was it to?
I don't know. It was a Twitter thing. It was a Twitter of like I said that. It looked like Pavlik was doing the hokey pokey in the net, and it was like, the winner is B.L. Grieve. I'm like going, what am I going to do with a gift card from here?
What was the card? Which place was the card for?
Jets Gear Store.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I actually have a few things from the Jets Gear Store that I bought online, but this is the one that means I'm wearing it right now. I actually was from the store that I don't wear it unless it's a special occasion. My special occasion t-shirt, you know. Living large.
Well, and again, like kudos to everyone here in Winnipeg that was there for you. I think that's a great story, and I'm glad that you found a connection with our city. Yeah. That's really cool.
I really did. I really can't wait to go there. I know all the people make fun of it. I actually got blocked by Jesse Spector for sticking up for Winnipeg one night. Like, what did you do that for? And I said, yeah, I can't stand him on Twitter anyway. So it's almost like, please don't throw me in the briar patch. But it was like this. Oh, I listen to the MTS Center on TV. Nobody's cheering there. I'm going, just shut up.
All right, let's take a little break from the interview to go through some housekeeping items and give you some information about this show. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can look us up at Beyond the Handle is the handle for the show, so definitely give us a follow there. We are on Facebook. Do a search for Beyond the Handle, and we will pop right up there for you. If you are not listening to this show via iTunes or Stitcher, you can go to each of those platforms and subscribe to the show. Again, just go in and search for Beyond the Handle. We will pop up there for you. Click on subscribe, and the new episodes will download to your device every week as soon as they are posted, which is nice, easy, and convenient. Of course, if you just want to hear a stream of a specific episode, you can also go to beyondthehandle.podomatic.com and you can find the show right there and listen to any episode that you would like to hear. If you'd like to email me and give me some feedback, recommend a guest, or if you'd like to be a guest yourself, I'd love to hear from you. The email address is beyondthehandle@gmail.com. And again, any feedback via Twitter or via email is very much appreciated. So yes, please reach out to me. We are a part of the Garbage Hill Network of podcasts. This is Winnipeg's first podcast network and features a number of local podcasts from around the city of Winnipeg. You can give them a follow at Garbage Hill on Twitter, and their website is www.garbagehillnetwork.com. All of their podcasts are featured. Some of the ones that I've been listening to lately include Couch Surfing, Witch Police Radio, Loose Ropes Wrestling, and the No One Is Safe podcast. They all have Twitter handles as well, so definitely check out those shows. But you can find everything all in one organized place at the Garbage Hill Network. Again, that's www.garbagehillnetwork.com. So with all that being said, let's get back into part two of the interview with Brian Grieve here on Beyond the Handle. Are the Jets, now Connor, what's the name of your other son?
Colm.
Colm and Connor?
It's Colm and Connor, C-O and C-O. It's just enough to confuse everybody to give Colm by the same name, you know.
And
I told my wife, I go, this is going to happen. No, it does.
And are they Jets fans?
They are.
Are they more of the local teams out there now?
Colm is really funny. He wants to be his own person, and he decided he wanted to be a Sharks fan because being a Winnipeg fan was weird. Mm-hmm. But we went to a place called Camp Okaizu, which is for cancer survivors and their families. And the guy goes, "You're a Jets fan. You're a Sharks fan. Who's your favorite player?" He couldn't name one, but he knows all the Jets players. Matter of fact, he got a bunch of their autographs when they came out of the Shark Tank.
Oh, nice.
After practice. So he got to meet all the guys. Like I said, it's very hard for me to pick on Chris Thorburn right now because he was like the nice – he was talking to me like I was a normal guy. The rest of the guys were sort of looking at their phones, didn't want to make eye contact. But Chris is over there like, "Oh, yeah, man, Brian scored two and these scored two. How you doing? It's nice weather. Hey, little guy, what's up?" You know, he's really a nice guy.
Nice.
So there you are like making fun of him on Twitter, and it's like, now I can't anymore. Now I'm a Thorburn fan.
I'll give Thorburn his kudos. I was with the Joe Blow guys tonight, and we were actually – giving Thorburn lots of kudos for being a great guy. And we had Melissa Martin on the show, who was also on Beyond the Handle a few weeks ago. And, you know, she said that he's, you know, outside of the hockey stuff that we criticize him for, he's a great guy.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because Garrett put out something the other day that said, you know, Chris Thorburn on your fourth line is pretty cool, is a pretty good player. It's like when you start putting him on the second line and things like that, it's like, here we go again, you know?
Mm-hmm. And at this point, your household has kicked cancer's ass.
You can't say anything until 4 years, so we mm-hmm. can't say we've kicked its ass yet, but I'm pretty confident. It's funny when I put out little moments of Connor's life because he was afraid to go on the ice. He'd go on the ice and ice skates because my older son got into it. I haven't pushed this on him. They decided to do it on their own. And I said, "Connor, if you want to do it, you can do it. You don't have to." Well, he learned how to stand up, and I said, "Okay, we'll put you in beginner hockey." And they don't even give him a stick. They just basic skating skills is what it is. And I tweet out a picture of him the other day, and it's like, I'll send it to you. I think you might have seen it anyway.
Sure.
And there he sits with his jersey off with oversized pads on that don't quite fit, so it makes him look beefier.
Mm-hmm.
And there he is with a smile holding a certificate, and of course he's lost both of his front teeth, baby teeth, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just looks like – it is like a perfect hockey picture. It just looks like the kid's born to play hockey. It's a real – and when you look at that next to some of the photos that we have of him under blankets, bald – white. It's just like a real, it's a great story. It makes you feel really good. It's got like 25, 30 favorites.
Yeah, definitely. Please send that over, and I'll post that along with when the show goes up so that people can check that out. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But then Colm, actually, he passed what's called mini mites. He's going to start in the in-house leagues. So he's going to do more advanced drills, and he's going to be able to go on the full ice and actually have a scrimmage. So, and it's taken him 7 months to get to that point, so I'm really proud of him, too. He's flew through the program. He's doing really well. So,
and this is like, again, like, this is not, you know, you have to remember, this is in San Francisco. It's not Winnipeg where there are rinks everywhere and
There's one rink in town. And it just happens to be the manager of that rink is my neighbor, lives right up the street from me.
So it works out pretty nicely.
Yeah, you know, it's fun to go because the kids get to go see her. The first time I took my son Colm on the ice, he wasn't doing so well. She went and got her skates on and took him around for about half an hour for a quick lesson. And the eyes on his face are really great. You know, it's like, you know, my daddy's an idiot, but you're the greatest woman in the world. That's great. So, no, it's like the guy down the street's always seen me with my Winnipeg stuff on. We talk hockey all the time. And it's what San Francisco is. It's if you see, like, the movies and things, it looks like the grittiness and this. It's more of a place where you walk down the street and start saying hi to people you've known for years. It's just a real closeness to the community here. Sometimes I can get myself complaining about these young tech people, you know, but the truth is my kids' classmates' parents are fantastic. They were really great to us during the illness. It's really good to see them. You're walking around seeing people in the neighborhood, you know. It's like living in a small neighborhood. Sometimes the Richmond district where I live they'll try to make a shot in an ad about small town America. And they're usually doing it somewhere on a side street in San Francisco where there's still a movie theater and a fruit store and a small grocery store and things like that. So I actually saw one. They were trying to do that and make it look like a small town. And I could see the streetcar
going past.
Head, so I knew exactly where it was. Yeah.
And I see one of the first things I noticed when I see your Twitter, Avi, is the San Francisco Giants hat. So
yeah.
I'm assuming that you are a Giants fan.
When I was like, I don't know what the name is. Vicker? I think it was Vicar Chevrolet.
Okay, yeah.
Followed me one night. So I followed back, because pretty much anything in Winnipeg, I stop doing the businesses unless it's a bar.
Okay.
It's like, because it's like, why is Don Sherwood following me? I'm not going to buy. So next thing he's putting out pictures. Oh, and here's Chris Thorburn coming to pick up his Jeep for the year, you know, and stuff like that. Next thing you know, here's Michael Frolik, my favorite player. There he is, standing there with his hand on the car with a San Francisco Giants hat on. And I was like, I went literally crazy tweeting it out. If you've seen one of my hashtags I'm trying to put out, I'm trying to get going, I call it Frolikaroni.
Okay.
That's what that's from. That's actually a very blown-up picture of Michael Frolik wearing a San Francisco Giants hat. And if he doesn't re-sign, I'm going to have to change my avatar. So it's really, I'm hoping he re-signs.
Keep your fingers crossed. So as a Giants fan, you have to tell us here, because it's been a long time since the city has experienced anything like it, but what's it like to win a World Series?
You know what's really funny? The Giants were the West Coast version of the Cubs. The A's won, and they came here in the 60s. The Dodgers had won many times. And the Giants just never got it done. You know, I was winning. It was like, and I grew up a Red Sox fan. So it was just like being a Red Sox fan on the West Coast, watching them just flub it every year, you know. And you just didn't think they were going to do it. And actually, the teams that won the World Series aren't the best teams I've ever seen them put out. They'd always just, they'd just kick the ball when they get to the World Series or the playoffs. But my wife we're friends with a woman. She was in her 90s, and she had followed them all her life. And you go over to her house, and it didn't look like an old lady's house at all. It had pictures of Joe Montana up all over the place. It was like going to a fraternity house, right? And she sat in that chair and watched the Warriors, but she was the biggest Giants fan. And one of the favorite things she ever said was she was called the Dodgers the dirty old Dodgers. Uh-huh. And she was Irish. She's American, but she was of Irish heritage. And the Mission District, which isn't Latino anymore, really, but she was born in that area of town, and a lot of that area of town moved after the sunset. And we're watching it go. We're watching them play. And they came back, I think, from the Reds. And one thing about the San Francisco, we had the 49ers. I mean, the Niners were on a great run in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And I just didn't think, something's going to go wrong. Here we go again. Something's going to go wrong. And next thing you know, somebody hit a home run, I forget, and I started jumping up and down the couch, and all my kids get up on the couch and start jumping up and down the couch with me. And I'm sitting there and on my knees, like just like screaming, and the horns are going off all over the neighborhood, and people are screaming out their windows. It was just a great feeling. The parade, I was watching the parade, because I was actually still, Connor was still sick when they did that.
Okay.
So I actually didn't get to go down to see the parade or do anything like that. I got to follow it like everybody else. But it's a great feeling. You know, anytime your team wins the World Series, and you get to live in a championship city, it's just a fabulous feeling. Everybody's wearing a Giants gear. And really, and I've tweeted this out a few times, Winnipeg has two professional teams. You have the Blue Bombers and you have the Jets. How many does San Francisco have? We have one. San Francisco Giants. None of the other teams don't play in San Francisco.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. That was another thing. It was like me being like me. I was sitting here watching the TV one night, and they were opening up Levi Stadium, going on how great of a place it was. And we're going to go to the Goodyear blimp, and that's a picture of the – that's not the Bay Bridge. That's the Dumbarton Bridge. Oh, that's nice. You know, and I live – pretty close to the Golden Gate Bridge. We can't see it because it's actually in another area. It's over a ridge.
Okay.
And I can hear the foghorns at night. So when I hear a San Jose foghorn going off, I'm like going, oh, give me a break.
So it's a hell of a trek for you to get down to Santa Clara for the 49ers and to San Jose, right, for Sharks games?
I go see Jets games.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just a little bit far. We had the San Francisco Bulls ECHL team here, and that was great for the kids. It was good family entertainment, but there's kind of a snobbery here. Oh, why would I go see that when I could go see the Sharks play? Okay, great. So we lost that resource.
I have to ask you, do you ever go over to Oakland?
It's like people who live in San Francisco, a lot of us start asking us where we go, and it's like somebody will start saying, oh, I've been to Northern California. I was in Fremont. There's this great place in Fremont. And we just stare at them. It's like, I've never been to Fremont.
Okay.
I can literally say, I have spent more time in Dublin, Ireland than I have in San Jose. And I probably spent more time in Dublin, Ireland, and Berkeley. I'm sure that's true. I don't go over there because we have everything here. We have parks. We have beach. It's sort of funny. You'll get on a plane. You'll go all over the world, you know. But it's like you say, hey, let's go over to Berkeley. Why?
I would bet you. I've been to San Francisco a number of times over the last few years because I do work out of Fresno. And I would bet you I've probably been over to Berkeley and to Oakland more times than you have.
You know, that's it's very possible. I've driven through it, you know, going somewhere else. It's not like I've never been there. Yeah. But Berkeley is just don't go. It's like Palo Alto. I've been to Palo Alto a few times. It's you get down there and it's like, well, what's this? It's like, well, it's kind of sprawled. It's nice. And matter of fact, it's a lot of the Bay Area is starting to resemble Southern California because it's all freeways and driving. San Francisco is really an oasis in that on the West Coast.
And you mentioned that you're big into cities and public transportation and gentrification.
Not gentrification as much because it's like the
not a fan of necessarily, but you pay attention
like
to it.
People that wear hats that say "Keep Austin Weird," mm-hmm. It's like I like to keep San Francisco a little bit weird because the world deserves something like that. You know, a lot of people come to see this city, and we have people moving on Lombard Street that are protesting that, I didn't know there was so much traffic on this street. I was like, are you joking me? People drive here people come here to drive down Lombard Street, and they're trying to close the street off to tourists. I'm like, well, what are you doing? That's a resource. There have been people in our neighborhood that have moved above bars and started a campaign to get the bar shut down. It's like, well, what were you thinking? It's a bar. You moved across the street from a bar that's been there for 50 years. And it's like, I didn't know that. This is a real loud place. I have kids. You know, come on. And it's like, this is a city of tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like even as like some right-wing show came out here and to do something on us. And the guy basically said, they're not really into this stuff. They're just tolerant of it. And it's like, exactly. We do whatever you want to do. You know, it's all kind of, there's so many churches here. It's crazy. It's a very different city to live in than it is to report on from outside of it, put it that way.
And there's been, I don't know if this was, I think this might have been before your time in the city, but I recall like there was kind of a famous instance where they were looking to, I think, put a freeway right through, I don't know if it was where the Embarcadero is.
Well, there was the Embarcadero freeway.
Yeah.
But it literally, it didn't pancake. The Cypress structure over in Oakland pancaked.
Okay.
And that's a real miracle story because when they thought there were 15,000 people dead, and they thought there was going to be bumper to bumper traffic because it was 5 o'clock at rush hour.
Yeah.
And it was that, and that's where most of the dead people were going to be. Turns out it was pretty empty because you know why? Everybody was home watching the World Series.
So the World Series saved lives. So
if the World Series had not been here during that earthquake, that structure would have been filled with people.
That's crazy. I'm assuming you've seen the 30 for 30 episode that they did on. I don't know if you have seen it.
30 for 30?
This is ESPN?
No. Another funny thing, I don't have cable.
Oh, okay.
I basically, it's like a lot of the cable stuff I can't watch. We go through the internet for stuff, Game Center. It's funny, Winnipeg isn't a real big draw in the States, so I can see almost every single Winnipeg game. If I was a Chicago Blackhawks fan, I wouldn't have the same luck. But I can see a lot of the games here. No, we try to stay off the TV as much as we can.
I've seen it on Netflix. It's basically like their documentary series on different sports stories, and they do one of their documentaries is about the whole thing surrounding the earthquake there. So they take it from a sporting perspective, but then they talk about what happened in the city. So I remember them talking about that freeway in Oakland where it basically the top part collapsed on the bottom. That's real scary stuff.
Well, we had one that almost did that. It's called the Embarcadero Freeway. Okay. And in the highway structure, and there are a few others that have been come down, but that's the one. We had a freeway that came from the Bay Bridge, and it went the whole way into the Mission, and it came the whole way into Chinatown.
Okay.
We're on the waterfront, elevated. So I was working downtown. I was a waiter, and I'd get off the bus and walk over, and it was just an ugly area of town. If you can see a freeway, you can see this little ferry building, and there's no reason to go there because it was separated from the city by this freeway, so there's nothing in there. You'd go in there to look at it, and it was dirty, and you know, I still remember the ferry building. That flagpole was at 45 degrees after the earthquake.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, they decided they were going to take it down. And, of course, all the shops in Chinatown and North Beach, oh, you can't get rid of this. This is how the people from the East Bay come to see us. And, oh, this is going to be the worst thing in the world. Well, they knocked it down one day and wasn't really paying attention to it. Went to work, and all of a sudden, I looked out, and there in front of me was Treasure Island, the Bay Bridge. You could see the whole way across the going. This is beautiful down here. So even downtown, the foot of Market Street, is a totally different neighborhood. It's actually getting nicer now because it was people would wonder why does it look like this? That freeway separated the city from the bay.
Yeah,
you know, our most natural feature we have. I mean, where do we put our ballpark on the bay? It's gorgeous if you see a baseball game. The whole city was separated because of that ugly freeway, and that was one of those turning points in San Francisco when it became a pretty city again. So that thing was an eyesore in retrospect.
So I'm gonna take it back to Winnipeg for the last little bit of our conversation here, because sure. I'm sure people will want to hear some stuff about your connection to the city a little bit more. You sent a few hashtags, and some of them I get there. I see buff giveth, buff take it away, buff taketh away, which yeah. To makes a lot of sense to me. The one I need a little bit of a story on is the Gospel of St. James.
Oh, the Gospel of St. James. Well, that's Ralph from St. James.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of Rick Ralph's post-game show, he's always the first caller. And finally, it was like I was sitting here right now, and I was sitting in the Gospel of Matthew, the Gospel, you know, the Gospel of St. James. Oh, this is perfect. So I started that on the internet.
Okay. Do you know what St. James is?
I know it's a part of Winnipeg, I think, right?
It is, yeah. It's a part in the kind of in the eastern side of the city, not deep in the eastern side, but yeah, over out east of St. James. Winnipeg is up until I think it was 1972 was like a lot of U.S. cities where every neighborhood was actually its own city,
mm-hmm.
and then everything merged into. You know, it wasn't kind of Unicity is what we called it here. So mm-hmm. now they call it Mega City in other places when they do this. But we were the Unicity when everything came together. So St. James was one of those cities. But you still hear people that cling very closely to the area that they are from.
Well,
so.
It's funny if you look at my my Twitter profile. I may say San Francisco, but I say the Richmond.
Okay,
I live in Richmond. I'm a Richmond resident. If I could get, you know, if I could make it so I never had to leave this neighborhood, it'd be the greatest thing in the world. I literally love this neighborhood. And there's other parts of the city that is like, oh, but you could move over here. I don't want to go there. We'll give you a place to live. I don't want to live there. I'm very happy where I am. So I get that idea. This is a city of neighborhoods. Sunset, Richmond, North Beach, Chinatown, Mission, Noe Valley. And, you know, I've seen them all evolve, change, mostly gentrify over the ages, Western Addition. But those areas of town, you'll see people from San Francisco wear the urban ubiquitous hoodie with the Richmond, the Sunset, North Beach, Ocean Beach on it. So yeah, it exists like that here too. But we've always been one city. It's always we've never had a little city. We've never had municipal. The Richmond has never had a municipal government. So
okay, and you've had a chance to meet some folks from Winnipeg, or at least one I know of. Who's come down to San Francisco?
Brent came down.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good seeing him. I've met Marco from. I knew he was here. He said he was here. He was wearing his James Wright jersey. I met him up and I saw him around the Shark Tank a few times. Allie Kay, who is a Winnipeg Jets fan, she's more of a Detroit Red Wings fan, but she loves the Jets too. She's has a lot of. Winnipeg friends. She's actually my son had the opportunity to turn on the Christmas tree at the Ritz-Carlton for Make-A-Wish.
Okay.
And she actually flew in from Phoenix for it. So she got to hang out with us in the Ritz-Carlton drinking a little bit of sparkling wine and watching him turn on the tree. So it was pretty cool. And she was a pediatric oncology nurse in Ohio who was a Jets fan. Didn't know anything about her except that, you know, she was a Jets fan. And when this all happened, it was like, by the way, you know what I do for a living. He said, you're going to get through this. I'm like, cool. So that was she comes up here. Last time she came up, we couldn't make time because the kids are so busy. But last time I saw her at an Oakland A's game.
We all went,
got together with her. So yeah, I'm available. People come into town, give me a call. I missed, I miss Jennifer. She showed up, and I follow so many people, and if I go off it for 2 days and I go back on, I miss. She was here for a wedding, and I would have loved to have met her. So there are people that show up here. It's like I'm available, you know. I can show up.
And San Francisco is a city that's probably best seen with a good tour guide.
Yeah, it was funny because I took Ren over to North Beach. And I said, you know what that is over there? That's where Joan DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe got married. He's like, what? You know, I could show him, and this is where Francis Ford Coppola owns this building, and stuff that I just know, I take for granted, everybody knows, and it's like, oh, really? Yeah.
You're going to have to come up here sometime.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think that's, and people will extend the same courtesy to you and definitely show you the city and show you a good time, and you're going to have to brave the cold if you're going to see the Jets. But
well, I can see at the beginning of the year or the end of the year, you know.
Or if we make a playoff run, and you're going to pay a lot for those tickets. But
well, I don't think I have enough money for those tickets. Yeah, but then again, you know, part of the allure of Winnipeg would be taking a skate on the river in the wintertime, you know.
It's, you know what, I guess I don't know a ton about this. I don't really see a lot of marketing of the city as kind of a winter destination, and I think that that's certainly something that they can focus on more. You know, I just think, you know, it's a unique experience to be somewhere where, you know, not necessarily where it's like freezing cold, but where it's, you know, where you can enjoy winter.
Yeah.
And Winnipeg is certainly a place where you can do that. And you hear about those famously cold, awful times in like January where I don't even know how it translates into Fahrenheit, like minus 30. but if we're in like the 20s,
it's freaking cold, man.
Yeah. And I mean, I know for someone that's not used to it, the 20s still feels like very cold. But for us here, like that's very pleasant winter weather. And that's where you would want to go for a skate on the river for sure.
Yeah, it's like San Francisco is a jacket city. I mean, it's like it's a wool sweater city. It's a little bit damp, and it's 60. So that's warm for you guys right now. But for us, my first year out here, I was so warm. I ran around in a t-shirt in the rain laughing at everybody. The next year, I was wearing jackets like everybody else. So
what do you enjoy the most about Twitter in general?
The humor. Just it's the greatest place in the world to be a smartass. I mean, it really is. It's... there's nothing more fun than trying to get people to laugh. I love it. You know, I think I never would have gone through the work to be a comedian, but it's so much fun to make a great meme or a great hashtag or a great observation. And you know that there's somebody out there getting a chuckle out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody's giving me a chuckle with something too out there, and I'm just getting a good laugh, you know, no matter what's going on, win or lose, I'm having a good time. And it's really good camaraderie out there. And plus you learn a lot. You can learn something really quickly on Twitter, too. I use it as my news feed. I use it for laughter. I use it when, you know, sometimes I'm sitting here almost in the dark by myself, like pondering where it all went wrong, like Sad Sack would say. But morally, I'm just getting all on Twitter, searching things and laughing and having conversations with people. And I'm sitting here by myself with everybody asleep, you know. So I'm having a good time with it. And I think that's the whole thing is like, guy, it's just supposed to be fun, and if you do it the right way, it's hilarious. It's wonderful.
Even if you're in the midst of a discussion with somebody that's, you know, you're in a disagreement, you can still do it and have fun too.
Oh, good. It's hockey, and plus it's like my hockey knowledge isn't that great anyway. I follow the team and watch the pretty puck go back and forth. You know what I mean? It's like compared to some of the people on Twitter who they've grown up playing it, they coach it, they study it. You know, I didn't play in the WHA. You know, I could hardly skate backwards. So what am I going to, what do I know? I'm very humbled by it, but nobody ever says anything. Nobody ever questions me. I think they're just happy I'm there. And it's like, I feel grateful in a way because nobody ever says, you don't know anything about hockey. It's like, yeah, you know, you're right.
Honestly, I think it's just a cool story that you're there. I think that it's awesome how, you know, you had a connection to our community that was probably a looser connection at one point in time, and with the power of the internet and with the power of Twitter, you're a big part of our community.
I know it was like I think so. I don't know who had moved to Winnipeg, and they were going on about the brown water, and I said, yeah, that's manganese, and I said, you know, I know way too much about this. I was making brown water jokes, and I try not to because I'm not really trying. I'm just trying to make a joke.
Yeah.
You know, I because I don't want to insult. I'm just trying to be funny, you know. It's like I'm careful about that though. I never make fun of the weather. I try not to mention the weather here. I tweeted out a picture on the beach here one time, and it was one of those miserable San Francisco days. It was gray, it was wet and damp, and there we are on the beach with the Golden Gate Bridge in the back, and I tweeted a picture up, and it was like, next thing the tweets start coming, such a sunny, warm day, I wish I was there. And I said, you know, it's not that bad today, is it?
You're a lot nicer guy than I am. If I was living somewhere like that, I'd be tweeting every day.
I can't do that. I know better. I'd be tarred and feathered when I got off a plane, like I said. No. It's okay. I'll keep it to myself. I do tweet out pictures when it's sunny with the kids rollerblading or something. I know people are going, damn you.
Well, we truly appreciate having you on there. We appreciate having you as part of our community, and we hope that maybe one day you'll come up here and we can have another conversation on this show in person. I'm sure I'll have to get in line to
sit in the studios, you know.
Yeah, I'll have to get in line, I think, because I know there's a lot of people that'll be lined up to see you, but hopefully we can do this again sometime in person, and maybe down in San Francisco.
Hey, why not? Yeah, like you said, you're coming down here. Just give me a call. I'm around.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
No problem.
This is Brian Grieb at BLGRIEB on Twitter. You can also follow Connor Grieb at CDGRIEB also on Twitter. I don't know if there's anyone else that you want to plug Twitter-wise, or...
I don't really need to know. Cullum has an account, but he just sort of was jealous of Connor's account, not knowing what it was. Connor going, I have a Twitter account. It's like, yeah, you do, but it's a different reason. But Cullum has an account too. I think he has 3 followers.
So give Brian a follow for sure, and make sure to read his stuff and interact with him. Anything Winnipeg related is obviously great in his book. So thank you again for coming on to Beyond the Handle.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
So there you have it, the first interview on Beyond the Handle done via Skype with somebody who is definitely an honorary Winnipegger, a Winnipegger at heart, and somebody that I really enjoyed talking to, and I hope that you also enjoyed the interview as well. Brian, again, can be found at BLGRIEB on Twitter, and you should definitely give him a follow and keep in touch with him. He probably knows more about what's going on in the city than quite a few of us, and is a great follow. So go and check him out. Thank you very much, Brian, for coming on to the show and for arranging an interview time across time zones with me. Thanks again. Thank you to everybody who has come onto the show as a guest, and thank you all for listening as well. I, again, truly appreciate it. If you want to be in touch with me, again, go to @BeyondTheHandle on Twitter. Give us a follow, send us some feedback, or email us at beyondthehandle@gmail.com. We're going to end the show with the song that you've been hearing throughout the episode. This is my favorite song from 2014. The band is called WJLP. They're actually from Rotterdam in the Netherlands, so another band from quite a ways away. But this tune is absolutely fantastic. Again, my favorite song of last year. You have to listen to it in its entirety. It's awesome. It's called She's All Right. You can find WJLP, as with all the Beyond the Handle bands, on Bandcamp.com, and they may also be on iTunes. But as always, I recommend Bandcamp first, because that's where I found them. So this is WJLP on Beyond the Handle, and we will see you all in a week.